The future belongs to those who control the culture, and the culture belongs to those who control the conversation. So we are having the conversations you wish you could have at church to build a safe and vibrant community. This is the Oz Table Talk Podcast. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Oz Table Talk. My name's Luke. I'm at the table with Ore, Steve and Dave.
Good evening.
Hey Luke. Hey,
what's up guys?
There was the customary chuckle and the customary addressing a camera.
I was just looking how you were looking down the barrel and I was like, wow, he's going full on.
Well,
I was giving a little glance and that's enough for me. It's a bit scary.
Acknowledgement.
We know you're there. It's okay.
Just the nod.
It's funny because when we were recording without cameras, no one cares where anybody sits. It's just like all over the place. We spent like 5 minutes discussing where people would sit today. Did you notice that?
Yes, and I drew the short straw.
Yeah. Well, more like Steve just kind of like jumped in that scene. It's like, I'm here.
Pulled all the other straws out.
Yeah.
We decided that the person with the most angelic face had to be in that position.
That's you, bro.
Says you with that cut. I mean, man, I wish everyone could see that haircut right now.
Yeah, I know with this lighting, it's kind of hard, but we should do like some close-up B-roll of his head just for the event.
Yeah, just put it on a rotisserie. Yeah.
Yeah. So product photography then.
That's right. Oh, man. Oh, so how's been?
Yeah, pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's been a full-on week for me, but it's nice to be here.
Yeah.
Get the head out of the books for a bit.
Cool.
Yeah, just busy for me too.
Yeah.
So did 30 hours by the end of Wednesday and then studying today. So
nice. Yeah. No, that's good. Good week for me too. I actually I shot a music video for somebody this week. So that was something out of the ordinary that I wouldn't normally do. So so that was good. I haven't edited it yet. Like literally it was yesterday afternoon, so it's all still on the SD card over there. So at least I hope that's where it still is.
Okay.
But nice. It's a bit of fun.
Is it like just instrumental or singing as well?
No, it's singing as well. So it's the song was already recorded. So this is for Alan Zana. I've done a few. This is be the third music video I've done for him. So he like calls me up every handful of months and he's like, oh, I've got another one. So hurry up. Like, let's not go do this. So,
hurry up.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Seriously, I think if I was available, I think he would have like a backlog to do. So he's keen. But no, that's cool. Okay. So that was my week. I enjoyed that.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Mm.
Yeah. So before I worry. Normally
he was hoping you were gonna miss him by looking at that face.
Honestly, nothing really too out of the ordinary.
Nothing to report.
Yeah, nothing to report really, other than doing reports.
3D plenty of
those. Not those kind.
Yeah, fortunately.
Yeah, okay.
Had a pile of discharge summaries that were this much. So I came in earlier today. Just like
paper.
I need to get that out of the way. Otherwise, it looks really unsightly and frightening seeing all this mountain of work. That just gets me on my nerves.
Yeah.
When I see that much work piling up.
Yeah. No, I get you. I know for me, even if the tasks I have are small, if I know there's like six or seven of them that are just sitting there, I just have all this anxiety around it. I can sit down and like knock those out. Like, I mean, even if they're tiny things, might knock them out in an hour, but just the knowledge that they're there is a burden. I get that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, our icebreaker question for tonight is, what do you wish you learned as a child?
I really like this question, by the way.
That's a good question, isn't it?
Shout out to Dave.
Yeah, okay, Dave found this one. So
just Google, mate. all right, I'll go first because it's really easy for me. I wish I had learned the piano. Mm. I started learning the guitar when I was really young, too young probably to be learning an instrument, and gave it up because I wanted to be at home playing with my toys rather than at the guitar teacher's place. Mm. And then I started learning the diddidgeridoo for a little bit.
Really?
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
But
was that with Alec?
No. This is when I was really
little. You were a kid, okay.
Still in Sydney at this stage, mate. So I was less than seven. Mm. Anyway, so started learning that. That was all right. Because, it's not really that hard to pick up how to play the didge. So, but I wish I had stuck with something because, I started learning the guitar again years later and pretty rubbish at it, if I'm honest. But I wish I had that as part of my life because I really resonate with music, but yeah, just don't have that much ability in that in there. So that's something I wish I'd have gone with.
Yeah. It's funny, you know, I can relate. I don't mean to steal that, but for me, guitar would be my answer because much the same. I love music and I really enjoy playing, but I didn't pick it up until comparatively late. Like I was basically an adult by the time I picked it up. And then within a very short space of time, I got responsibilities and it just got crowded out of my life. And so I can play to a very low grade. You're a better player than I am and you reckon you're rubbish. So
we're both rubbish.
Yeah. But I really wish I had stuck with that earlier. I actually did. I mean, I had music lessons and whatever, but I chose the wrong instrument when I was younger. I don't know even why I did, but I was fascinated by bass guitar. And so I picked that up and I, you know, had, you know, went to...
You could still play that though, couldn't you? If you picked it up now?
Oh, yeah, probably. I haven't in many years, but yeah, probably. And probably do a better job now. But I was taught, but because I didn't have like a band that I played in, it's not an instrument that
it's not a solo instrument.
Yeah, exactly. So, and so therefore I never developed that...
Family worship with the kids.
Oh yeah,
not quite that much. So that was just kind of the thing. It was just I didn't have an outlet for it, and because I never had an application, I never got passionate about it enough to really bite into it. And I was at a good age; like I started that when I was like 13, so I would have had the time and done. But
yeah. Sorry, I got so many weird mental pictures coming through my head right now. I'm just imagining Seth walking into Sabbath school and all he knows is to sing the bass part.
Yeah.
How about you, Aura? You said you liked the question.
Yeah, like I've really, really would have loved to have learned multiple languages.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Because for me as a kid, I didn't understand the value of it. Like I remember, like I'm sure all of us would have had to learn some kind of language. And for me, it was Japanese. And for me, I thought, oh man, this is such a waste of time. Let's just learn math, guys.
That's not what I was thinking.
Yeah.
To me, it seemed like I didn't understand the value of it. So as a result, I kind of like mucked around during that class instead of paying attention. And whereas looking back, I'm thinking, man, the applications of what you could do if you were like fluent in, you know, few of the major languages is just profound. Like even like just working in a hospital, like the amount of instances where people have come and we don't have a translator or you know, we don't have, you know, and then happens to be a doctor who happens to speak that language or a social worker who happens to speak Vietnamese and is like as Aussie as you can imagine. I'm like, it's just, you just have such mad respect for that, and it's and I have a lot of respect for people who are just like polyglots, can speak multiple languages. It just says something about intellect and character, that they have the determination to learn all those languages. So that's cool. One thing that I'm like, wow, like I wish I'd saw the value at it at an early age.
When I was a kid, because my dad speaks fluent Maltese, when I was a kid, he tried to teach me and I just did everything I could to avoid learning that. And I regret that. I really wish I could speak it, you know, even like regardless of the usefulness of the language. I think there is so much you learn about how thoughts are communicated by learning how to speak in another language, because our language frames the way we think. And so if we actually learn another language, we increase our capacity to understand the worldviews of other people. So.
Very philosophical, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, well, I was very lucky to be exposed to a lot of things as I grew up. And yeah, I was thinking along similar lines, I would have liked to learn probably Spanish or something like that. Because, I never got exposed to any languages throughout. Not that I would have enjoyed it or wanted to do it as a kid, but
hindsight.
Traveling, stuff like that. Yeah. See, would have been beneficial.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, so we get our head around the actual topic for tonight. I'd just like you to introduce it to us, alright? Because this is your question. This is your idea.
Yeah. So for me, like, this is one of the things that I've been, I guess, meditating upon. And like, I've always wondered just like two different ways of approaching Christianity. Like, is there room within the Christian experience, within the Christian purview, to have probability be a major part of our Christian living or Christian worldview? Or should everything have to be always work for the good of us? Or should everything always have to be like directed by providence? So probability versus providence, if you like. And yeah, it's something that I've grappled with, because I feel like the answer to that question has major ramifications to how we potentially live our lives, how we make big decisions, and how we view God even.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. So it's a really big deal for me recently. I mean, obviously, I guess it does stem from there's a part of area of my life that I'm having to make a big decision regarding to. So there's definitely sense for that. But even just in general, like it's just one that I feel like I need to get to the bottom of this. Mm. So there's just to have an idea how we should approach Christianity. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So I was like, let's throw it out there.
Yeah.
Help me out.
Yeah. I find it's a challenging question, right? Because like so many things, it's not so much what's right and what's wrong, but it's holding tension between two seemingly opposite ideas. Hmm. And I think that there is a lot of wiggle room. And so I think it's a great topic for us to hash out, because there is so much space on either side of the discussion.
Do you guys mind if I throw in a couple of just introductory verses?
Go.
Just to kind of set the mood, if you like.
Yeah.
Set the ambience.
Mm-hmm. So, ambience. So, never heard it described that way, but I like it.
Need some mood lighting.
Yeah. So the first verse I want to read is Psalms chapter 37, verses 23 to 24.
Yeah.
The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delights in his way. Though he fall, he shall not be utterly cast down, for the Lord upholds him with his hand. So it says the steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord. Mm-hmm. So there's that implication that God's directing someone who's connected with him. Mm-hmm. That person's steps, or this is more figurative speaking, his direction in life. Mm-hmm. The last verse I like to just put in just as an introductory teaser. Isaiah chapter 30, verse 21. Whether you turn to the right or to the left, your ears will hear a voice behind you saying, this is the way, walk in it.
Hmm. Yeah.
that's pretty explicit.
So what we're saying is, following God, every single thing and decision that we ever make and every seemingly random thing that happens to us all has purpose and meaning, and we should accept it as that. Hmm. That's sort of the ambience. Mode of thinking, right? That's the ambience.
Yes, I feel like the experience of my life personally doesn't... I feel like there's way more to the story than that.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah, do you hear the voice behind you, Ray?
if I did, you guys might report me.
Psyche Val.
The text that came to mind just as we were chatting then was Romans 8:28, right? It's that really famous passage. And we know that all things work together for good to those that love God and who are called according to his purpose. And I have cited that verse myself many times. And funny enough, the first time I was ever challenged on that point was that I heard a preacher say, I'm not even sure what denomination this guy was a part of, but he made a statement in his sermon that I'm immortal until my work for God is done. And that really resonated with me as a young man, because I'm like, oh yeah, like, you know, yeah, like that's it. And so I just started recycling this phrase, and a pastor said to me once, well there, like, are you sure that's what you mean? Because what about untimely deaths? There is such a thing, right? Like, and he pointed out a few examples in scripture even of people who had, you know, whose lives were ended not because of some greater good, but because there was some calamity or whatever it might be. Or even Jesus, when he talks about the tower that collapsed, you know, like various examples. And that really like destroyed that picture in my head. And ever since then, I've sort of like wrestled with it from time to time. But I really think that when we read this passage, we unintentionally make a mistake with it. And I think what we do is we invest it with meaning that wasn't necessarily there. All things work together for good doesn't mean that God is the instigator of all those things, but it means that he can utilize whatever happens and utilize it for his glory in the long run. Mm. And I think there's a very subtle but very important line of demarcation there. Yeah, that was very dramatic. Yeah. Sort of like, was that just like, okay, I'm about to
have an
something.
Example now.
Before you go there, Steve, can pull apart the ambience for a second?
Yeah.
In Psalm 37 that you quoted there already, it says, the steps of the good man are ordered by the Lord. He delights in his way. And then it says, though he fall. He shall not be utterly cast down, for the Lord upholds him with his hand.
Ooh.
It's kind of, like, evidence is kind of in the text there, isn't it? You know, because if we're saying every part of our life is directed explicitly by God, then we're saying the fall is also directed by God, which I think is not what Psalm 37 is talking about. I just wanted to point that out there before we left that too far in the trail, that, yeah, if we're going to say that, there's going to be, you know, a fairly difficult argument we're going to have to deal with along the way.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't think that's what we're trying to say, but just throwing that out there. So, Steve, you've got an example along those lines, hey?
Yeah, that's exactly, pretty much exactly what I was going to say. So, for those who aren't familiar, Paul is on a boat heading to Rome because he got arrested and wanted to go to Rome rather than get axed by the Jewish people. And he ends up getting shipwrecked on an island, and they're building a fire, and a snake comes out and bites him. And as a result of that, he's miraculously not killed from a viper. And the people think he's a god and start worshipping him, and he says, no. Like, this is a true god, and he gets a witness. And I think this is a great example, because if we believe what we've been talking earlier, did God instigate the snake bite?
Mm-hmm.
And personally, I don't think God did, but God used the snake bite, even though it was a potentially harmful thing, for his purposes in witnessing to the rest of the people on the island.
Yeah. Well, generally, like in any kind of ethical or moral framework, would you guys say that do the ends justify the means?
No.
Straightforward kind of reasoning, right? Like, I expected more direct answers than that. It's like, Steve, yeah.
I think it does depend, honestly.
Okay. Well,
yeah. I mean, I don't think it's quite that black and white. I mean, it's close, but...
Well, I guess when I say ends justify means, let's say, does accomplishing a righteous end permit the usage of sin?
How do you define sin in this context?
Conscious, unloving behavior towards somebody.
Okay. Well... I think conscious unloving behavior is, I mean, that's pretty clear.
Yeah.
However, sometimes, like tough love or something like that, sometimes you have to do something that doesn't seem nice to somebody else that's actually in their
that's
best interest.
Different.
That's not wrong, though.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd say that's a different category, but I agree with you.
Yeah, but to me, that still feels like the ends justify the means, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
I don't want to do this because I know it's going to hurt you, but I know it's going to be in your best interest in the end. I mean, that's kind of parenting in some ways, isn't it?
It comes back. Oh, absolutely.
I was thinking maybe you'd resonate there, man.
140 times a day. But I think the point there is the motivation.
Yeah.
Right? Because the motivation is a loving motivation.
Yeah.
The action might not seem a loving action, but the motivation is a loving motivation.
So if we were living in Nazi Germany and we weren't Jews, but we were Germans and we were hiding Jews for their welfare under the basement, the SS knocks on our door.
I'm flat out lying, mate. You know, to me, that's an easy one.
Haven't seen any. No.
But some would be uncomfortable with that.
And the thing is, I wouldn't, like, because lying is obviously bad, but there's actually a story of a lady who that exact scenario happened. And they had a trapdoor under the table, and she's like, oh, they're under the table. And the SS are like, you're an idiot, and left. And they literally had like 10 Jews under the, like, I don't know how many it was, but they actually had like, so her not lying actually
us blurring into the gray area, right?
It's gray. Like personally, I would lie because, and I know I just said no, the ends don't justify the means, but you know, that would be me going, no, I don't trust this situation enough to, like, I guess what Aura is saying, like, I don't trust God's providence enough not to take it into my control.
And so just to clarify, I think, you know, your question was well intentioned, and sorry I couldn't just give you a straightforward answer.
That's fine.
But I think even when you are trying to see the bigger picture and make decisions that might have someone else's best interest at heart, you've got to be really careful with that because you're kind of playing God in that scenario, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard to admit that, but you kind of are. And sometimes I think God is calling you to do that, right? Like, for example, with your children. You know, just to use an easy one. You know, sometimes you've got to do that because that's kind of like, that's the wise thing to do in a situation. But I think even whenever you do that, it's probably wise to do that with a bit of fear and trepidation because, you can influence somebody's life for the good by doing that, but you can also stuff their life up by doing that. Kind of makes sense to me to be a bit cautious about that.
Yeah, and I think there's an important point in the verse that you read at the beginning and that you read again, Dave. It says, I forget the exact word, but it's like, those who are connected to God, he will direct their footsteps. Mm. I think that's like a really important distinction, and we'll probably come back to it later, but like, I think that connection is the key there. Like, you can be trying to do the right thing out of your own strength, and like Dave's saying, it can all go to like hell in a handbasket really quickly. Yeah.
It also implies a bidirectional relationship. God leading and us following.
Yeah.
So if God leads and we don't follow,
that's
not his fault.
Yeah. Right? So. I have no idea where you want to go with this conversation, but I thought about Psalms 1 as maybe some good counsel.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in contrast to Isaiah, was it 30 you read? Isaiah 30?
Yeah, Isaiah 30, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, that, as we said, that sounds very black and white. You know, you'll hear a voice behind you saying, you know, this is the way to go, lad. And, you know, that sounds really lovely, but I don't hear that voice behind me most of the time. So what about when you don't? So Psalms chapter 1 says, "Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor stands in the path of sinners, nor sits in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night. He shall be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that brings forth its fruit in its season, whose leaf also shall not wither, and whatever he does shall prosper." So there's some really practical advice there in Psalm chapter 1. So first of all, you'll be blessed if you don't walk in the counsel of the ungodly, or stand in the path of sinners, or sit in the seat of the scornful. So like, that's like some pretty obvious stuff that he's saying there, right? So like, if you're wanting to know the right thing to do, he says don't go asking people who aren't going to have, you know, God's wisdom to portray to you. Seek it from a place where you know you're going to be receiving some spirit-led guidance. That's the first thing. Or the standing in the path of sinners, or sitting in the seat of the scornful, I think speaks for itself. But then the second part of that verse that I thought think is really important is, his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law he meditates day and night. If we are understanding God's character through, you know, his portrayal in his word, in his law, you know, all of the ways in which God reveals himself to us, even studying nature, whatever, however God speaks to you, if you understand God, then you have a better chance at understanding his will for your life, right? Whereas if you're just focusing on what is his will for my life, but you don't understand him or know him, I think you're kind of, I don't know, shooting yourself in the foot a little bit there.
Yeah.
It's like trying to understand the details without understanding like the bigger picture first.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's going to be like a, you know, trying to see the tree for the forest sort of a situation. So I think be really important to, yeah, just to stop and I guess spend some time getting to know God the person. Before, you know, trying to understand what.
Sorry, it's God the person. I was like, oh.
yeah, whatever.
I get,
I'm comfortable with that language.
Yeah.
If you're not, so be it.
Oh, no. It's,
not you. Yeah. I mean, you, anyway.
The corporate you.
You know what I, you know what I mean.
All of me.
All of the youths out there. Yeah. Understanding God the person will inform understanding, you know, God's direction for your life.
Mm.
And that's not to say don't seek his direction, but I think that's a good first step. Anyway, blah, 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 but you get my point.
Yeah.
I really resonate with that, because I remember one of the things that my brother once told me, which kind of was in relation to Isaiah 45, where it has this prophecy regarding Cyrus. I get the impression that even though, because there are some people out there, like from that verse that you just read, the implication is that if you do the right thing, if you're following, if you are inclined to want to do the best you can in following God's principles, good things will happen. Like it's like this sense of natural cause and effect, natural consequence. Then it's not just because you may not be a fourth generation Adventist, but you know, you can still reap the benefits that are outlined in those verses. And you see this in someone like Cyrus, who like he wasn't a fourth generation Adventist, so to speak, right? Like this is a guy who grew up in pagan roots, you know, and God managed to lead his life in such an incredible, spectacular way, simply because he was probably just following the basic cause and effect biblical principles, whether he knew it or not, that was outlined to him. And like, for me, that's really profound, because because a lot of the times, like you sometimes wonder how much, like you think that those kind of blessings are only afforded to those who know Jesus at an intimate level or something. But I get the impression that's not necessarily the case. Like you can still follow God's principles without even knowing and reap those There's blessings.
I would go so far as to say is the reason that it works is because God created reality, right? He made everything to operate this way. He's not giving... The instructions that we read in scripture are not arbitrary. He's literally saying, this is just the best way to live life. Mm. And so if someone else is doing that without access to this book or without knowledge of this book, mm-hmm. then they're going to have the same results because they are living in the same reality that you and I are. Mm. And so I think the question really that we're sort of circling back around to is, and I can't remember the language you used at the beginning, but to the degree is like, where is the line between mm-hmm. God's providence and chance, mm. you know, and probability of things happening? Mm. So I don't know. How do you guys think about that? Is there a case where God's providence is real and legitimate? Well, mm. I think what we've read says very clearly that yes, there is. Mm. God does intervene and sometimes in very, very significant ways. Mm. But on the flip side of that, are there some things and even perhaps very significant things that happen that are purely based around chance mm. or the decisions of people in isolation from their relationship with God?
Yeah. Yes and yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's just where we live, right? So the question that I then ask is, so where does that point meet in the middle? Because if you have... let me reframe that a little bit. So this is something that we spoke about a little bit before we started recording, and that is, on the one end, if we say everything is God's providence, that takes us to, as far as theology goes, that takes us in the direction of Calvinism, where we're saying God's sovereignty is his primary character quality. Whereas if we go in the other direction and we say, well, it's more to do with just the decisions that that person or that person or that person made, then it is chance to a large degree, but it is chance based in the free will decisions of people, which is taking us down Arminian theology. And so... the problem is there's truth on both ends of this equation. So where do we meet them in the middle? I don't know. What do you guys think? Or how do you reconcile them in your mind?
I find myself, the reason why I wanted to bring this as a topic, I find myself feeling guilty thinking Christian life in those terms of chance. Because for me, I feel like I'm robbing God of the opportunity to do something amazing in my life. I'm robbing God of the opportunity to direct my life. Because like when you read about the guys in the early church, they seem to be always be led by the Spirit to somewhere. Mm. Whether it's Jesus being led into the wilderness, whether God leading Paul to minister to the Ethiopian treasurer, or whether it's, you know, God telling Peter to do a Bible study to the centurion. Yeah. Like it's like, hey, what's going on? Where are my experiences? Am I like some kind of like secret pagan that I'm not aware of? Or what's going on? Why
some kind of secret pagan?
why aren't I having those experiences? Yeah. Like why isn't that not just part of like is it possible that true, truly surrendered Christian experience should have some element of that? Mm. Like, are we underselling God by saying it's just... No, like we shouldn't expect that. It's, you know, we should just rely on pure probability.
Mm. Yeah, I think so. Mm. And I think I speak for probably all of us here to say I'm guilty of that. But yeah, I agree. I think probably like the easiest example to I guess, use as a case study for this is Jesus, the life of Jesus. So depending on how you sit on this, as to how you'll perceive what the way Jesus was led by God. You know, like if you go down more that Calvinistic sort of route, then I think you're probably going to see more of a direct sort of inspiration of every move Jesus took in his life. But if you go down that more Arminian pathway, you still have to accept that Jesus was led very clearly by God. So right from Matthew chapter 4, is it 4 when he's led into the wilderness? Yeah, it's 4. Beginning of 4. When he's led into the wilderness for 40 days, right? Mm. It explicitly says the Spirit led him there, right? Mm. And that was for the purpose of being tempted, right?
Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, even these directions that we get from God are going to lead us into, you know, maybe some challenging circumstances. Mm. But Jesus went there to overcome those challenges, right? Mm. So it doesn't mean God was leading him into failure. Mm. It just meant he was leading him into, you know, the opportunity to overcome those challenges. But then right throughout Jesus' ministry, there was opportunities that Jesus had where he met with people in what would seem to be, you know, fairly, I guess, divine appointment sort of situations. You know, like we often cite the woman at the well, that experience, as though, you know, Jesus, you know, had this vision that she was going to be there, right? The way that I would probably perceive that is probably a little bit less spiritualized, and sort of see that as more that he was intimately connected with his father, and so he was feeling inspired to go to that well. And then when he was there, he was, you know, given this opportunity to meet with this woman, right? Now, you can take that a different way, and that's fine. You know, I'm completely open to the idea that Jesus was literally there to meet with that woman, and he saw something about her life, you know, because he certainly knew a lot. But yeah, however God was doing that leading, Jesus' life was full of those things where he went certain places at certain times for certain reasons. And so, yeah, I think definitely, or, you know, I think we can be more led by God. But I think that doesn't rule out the other alternative, that I think ultimately there's a lot that goes on that isn't a direct, you know, it's not the handprints of God that we see on the world. And to me, the biggest evidence of that, I suppose, is the existence of sin. You know, the kind of God that I read about in Scripture, you know, if he's not into free will, then he doesn't exist, right? Because you can't, the way I read Scripture, at least, I can't reconcile those two things. A God who is sovereign over all things and controls every decision, you know, down to what you had for breakfast, if you did. And, you know, there's that. And then there's also sin. And it's like, well, you know, he's either really evil. He's
culpable. Yeah.
Or, yeah. Or to me, the better alternative would be he doesn't exist. So I see, you know, free will, and I don't like to use the word chance, but if you want to use the word chance or probability, I see that as a real thing, because like the existence of sin to me necessitates that. I don't know. Does that make sense?
The way I was thinking about it or visualizing it, I'm more of a visual thinker, not surprising. But the
circles connected with lines.
Yeah. Well, this is, as you were talking, this is the way I was thinking about it, that there are like a series of significant events in our life that God is leading us through. And he does give us very clear direction for, I believe, for some things at some times. But our life in between those times is punctuated by randomness, right? And we have to recognize that sometimes the sample size is big enough that we should expect truly crazy things to happen simply by probability. So, and we can expect that. But I think that there are, that is punctuated by, our life is punctuated by those serious events that God does give us the guidance to get through. But going back to that text in Romans that I was mentioning earlier, that all things work together for God, it doesn't matter which series of those decisions that we accept, whether we took God's lead or we didn't, whatever the outcomes are that we choose based on our free will, God still has a contingency plan to utilize that and optimize it for the kingdom, whatever that may be. So that's the way I think about it. So it's like it is a true mixture of both perspectives. And I think that's the only way we give God room to be God, but also give us room to have free will.
Yeah. And you got all that from that little scribble.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you can see this.
That's very efficient. I thought he was doing a chemistry lesson there. Or
don't judge me.
Yeah. Are they single bonds or?
Yeah, exactly. Can we read the rest of that passage?
Yeah.
I was thinking maybe going there later, but it sounds like we're there.
We're here now, right?
We do that. So it says, we know that all things work together for good for those for those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose, for whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his son, that he might be the firstborn among many brethren. Moreover, whom he predestined, these he also called. Whom he called, these he also justified. And whom he justified, these he also glorified. The reason I wanted to read the rest of that passage is because that opens the Calvinistic can of worms. So like there's this idea of predestination that comes up in there, which is the really big, you know, bugbear, I suppose, of the people who
have of Armenians.
I was going to say, yeah, I guess either way. And I think it's really, really interesting the way that Paul frames it. It's completely different than most of the arguments you see out there in theological circles. So the way he frames it is that he says, those who are the called according to his purpose is kind of the way he justified the statement that all things work together for good, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then he says, for whom he foreknew, he also predestined. And he gets all the way down to called, right? Mm-hmm. Before he gets to called, he says, for whom he foreknew, he predestined, right? And so the obvious question is, well, who did he foreknow?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is, come on, guys.
Like the answer is believers, people that follow him.
Well, I mean, he's God. He foreknew everybody, right?
Yeah.
Did he not?
Yeah.
So far we're talking about everybody, aren't mm-hmm. we? And so he says, for whom he foreknew, he also predestined, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the predestination argument actually, according to Paul, applies to everybody, right?
Yeah.
And he doesn't leave this, you know, any room to wiggle as far as I'm concerned. He says, predestined to be conformed to the image of his son. Yeah. Right?
So God's saying universally we are all predestined.
Right. God's predetermined plan for everybody is that we would be to be become like Jesus, right? Mm. And but he doesn't stop there. He says to be conformed to the image of his son, that he might be the firstborn among many, many brethren, for whom he also predestined, which we're saying, well, he foreknew everyone.
Mm-hmm.
He predestined everyone. So whom he also predestined, where am I? These he also called. So the verse 28, called according to his purpose, so far that sounds like everybody, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, sometimes we make that a caveat as like, you know, well, this only applies to the righteous, you know, all things work together for good. But that's not what Paul's saying. Paul's saying this about everyone. Everyone is predestined. Everyone is called. He goes on to say everyone is justified,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it's the same, you know, whoever he called, he justified. And then these he also glorified. And I just want to throw out in there a little bit of theological information on that last point, because that's where some people are going to be like, oh, well, that doesn't apply to everybody.
Mm.
Well, it does if you think about Jesus. Right, because humanity has been glorified already in the person of Jesus. So in Paul's mind, he sees humanity as being currently fully glorified in the person of Jesus Christ, and everybody else is a model after Jesus. And he kind of hinted at that already in verse 29, where it says that he might be the firstborn among many brethren. Right.
Mm.
So Jesus has sort of typified exactly what God predestined for everybody. So everybody has been made possible for everybody to be glorified and sitting in the presence of God one day, right? In Christ. That's possible. It's already accomplished.
Yeah. We are already seated in the heavenlies, right? To use Ephesians language.
Yeah. Already predetermined.
Yeah.
You know, that's exactly there. What Paul is saying there. Yeah. So I would argue against John Calvin. that statement is dodgy as. I don't ever want to have an argument with John Calvin because he's so much wiser than me. But anyway, against his theology, I would argue that that's not what Paul's saying here. I would argue that what Paul is talking about when he talks about predestination is that God has a plan for the salvation of every person in the world, right?
Yep.
And so every time we make a decision, whether good or bad, God is going to work with us on that decision is kind of what he's getting at, in my opinion, in verse 28. And that's what you were saying earlier, Luke. But I just wanted to clarify that given its wider context.
Definitely.
That this verse does apply to everybody, the good and the bad.
Mm.
You know, because when I make a stupid decision, or when somebody who doesn't know Jesus who makes a stupid decision, it's not like God is rejecting, you know, them after they've made a stupid decision because they don't know him, right?
Mm.
That's not the God we read about in Scripture. That's not the God who sent Jesus for them.
Yeah.
I mean, duh, right? That's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Sorry, Steve. Being a bit too blunt there.
Oh, anyway. No, I love it.
Anyways.
Happy chuckles.
Happy chuckles. I just think it's really important that we understand that the predestination that God speaks of, at least that Paul wrote about here, is that God has a plan for each of us to be saved. That doesn't mean everybody's going to be saved. Jesus was very clear that there's going to be people who are going to be lost, right?
Yeah.
That's unfortunate, but it's the truth, right? But you read this, you read that in combination, if you like, with 2 Peter 3, verse 9, which says that God isn't willing that anyone should perish, but that he wants everybody, you know, everybody to be saved.
Yeah. So I think,
yeah, so I think God's predetermined purpose is he sent Jesus, whose blood was enough for all of us. You know, there is no sin that is unpardonable because Jesus' blood was enough, right?
Mm.
And so therefore, his predetermined plan for you is that you would be saved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't think what Paul was writing about was his predetermined plan for you tomorrow morning, or is for you to have cornflakes.
But you shouldn't anyway, because that came from heretic. sorry, a bit of in-house humor there. Never mind.
Adventist history.
Yeah.
History.
Yep. Church history.
I find that such a
How does that sit with you?
Liberating.
Liberating?
Yeah. Hmm. It's liberating in many sense. Like, it's liberating because sometimes you often used to... I used to envy people who didn't necessarily share the burdens of a Christian experience where, like, everything had to be providentially ordained. Mm. You know, you can just go about your life.
Yeah.
You know,
make your own choices rather than waiting for God.
Simply going with the intention of wanting to do the right thing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And like, you know what I mean? Like, and I looked at that, and rather than it's always about, okay, how is this going to fit with God's plan?
Yeah.
And, you know, trying to...
How do you know that right thing is the right thing?
Yeah. Like, and just people just going about their days, just, you know, aiming to make the most out of life by making life better for humanity.
Yeah.
And not thinking... You know, making it just simplifies everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that and reading that text that way, just offers that liberty that actually it's no matter whether you're churched or unchurched, like God's plan is the same for everyone.
Yeah.
Like and we can have that liberty knowing that God He's taken care of the salvation problem. He's taken care of our destiny problem.
Yeah.
We just have to go about our lives and just live it to the full.
Yeah. I think Christianity is more about living as Jesus would live if He were a doctor. You know, if he were an engineer, if he were a surveyor, it's a lot less about, okay, like what is these macro decisions? It's a lot more about the micro decisions and being as productive and as Christ-like as we can in the sphere that we find ourselves and the rails that we've put ourselves on in life. Mm-hmm. Because God knew that you were going to be into health. He knew that you were going to have a passion for that because he put that in you, right? Mm-hmm. And you then fanned those flames and he knew that's where you were going. So
having said that though, if Ori hadn't have gone that way.
Yeah.
God had, I'm sure, God had a handful of other plans
yeah.
that would have been really great for yes. your life.
I think we underestimate how many plans God has yeah. for us. Yeah. That's probably what you're saying.
Yeah, I guess what I'm getting at is yeah. I don't think it's okay to say that God has a predetermined plan for every single one of our lives and that's the only plan.
Yeah.
I think there are some people, I will qualify that.
And John the Baptist.
Yeah, I think there are some people who God has a very special plan for them. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you feel like that might be your calling, you know, wrestle with that. Don't just give up and be like, oh no, they said I'm free. You know,
yeah. I mean, you're no longer free. Yeah,
if John the Baptist had have said that, we would have been in strife. So do you know what I mean? Like sometimes you got to recognize that you
there
might
are
be
some
an exception
people that have
to the rule.
A call. Yeah.
You know, Hosea, for example.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a pretty big exception. So glad that was him, not me.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine that? Like, I would have been like, this isn't God. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Like, it's got to be in harmony with his word. How is this in harmony with his word, right?
Right. But yeah, you know, like, so some people there's going to be a specific call. But I think in general, my opinion, just, you know, throwing that out there, it's just an opinion. But my opinion is that there's not just one plan that will work for you. There are many ways in which you could serve God and glorify him in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And if you make a choice in a certain direction, you know, you're not locking yourself into that direction, but God will work with that. And if it's a good direction, you know, if it's one of many good directions, he'll work with that and he'll allow you to serve him in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
But if you decide, no, I'm going to shift more in this direction now, you know, I've experienced that several times in my life, shifting directions, and God's like, yeah, sweet, no worries, I'll come along for that journey as well. Do you know what I mean? And that's not to say that you know, that there's no value in settling for one thing and excelling in that. You know, there's many people who serve God in a wonderful way as a result of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess what, like you said, Laura, it's a bit liberating to realize that, you know, you're not stuck. You're not, and you're not. Mm-hmm. I don't think you have to spend your entire life questioning, is this my only calling, you know, or is this my calling, or is this, you know what I mean?
Try something else.
Yeah.
I like that as well because it, oh, now my brain's freezing up. It's like God's coming on the walk with us too. It's not like, like sometimes, I don't know, I feel personally that the relationship feels one-sided sometimes.
Mm.
But like with that theology, it's like God's like, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah, let's go.
Like, I haven't said anything.
Right.
But that's all right. We can do this together.
Yeah. And by the way, like the first verse, I keep going back there, but the first verse Ori read said that. Right?
Mm.
Steps of a good man ordered by the Lord. He delights in his way. Therefore, he shall not be cast down. What does it say? For the Lord upholds him with his hand. Mm. So, like you say, God's walking that path with us, hand in hand. Yep. It's pretty beautiful.
Yeah. No, that's nice. But,
yeah.
Oh, is that a little tear?
Stop it, guys.
Stop it. Can I throw a caveat though? So, you know, continuing the Romans trend, Romans 12. So I guess what I was trying to say, I realized I didn't say as clearly as I would have liked to. What I was trying to say in Romans 8 is that the predestination is more of a big picture predestination for our lives, right? It's not the every single decision that you make sort of predestination that we've sometimes read into it. However, in Romans 12, verse 1 and 2, it says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, you present your bodies a living sacrifice. Keep that tucked behind your ear because that's going to be important. Holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. And don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind that you may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. So there's, you know, good, acceptable, perfect will of God. They're all sort of phrases that we're kind of wrestling with a little bit tonight. But I think it's really, really important to realize Paul's calling us here to be a living sacrifice. So what's the difference between a living sacrifice and a dead sacrifice?
The living sacrifice can continue giving, like it goes on after
right.
the.
It's dynamic.
Yes,
right.
That's a good word.
It's not a static sacrifice that, you know, is going nowhere. You know, once you make it, you're locked in. You know, God's calling us here to be a living sacrifice, and that is to say, you know, if you're walking down the street. Probably a bad example, but anyway, I'm going to run with it now.
Yeah, you started.
You're walking down the street, heading in one direction, and God, you know, inspires you to take a different direction because he wants you to meet somebody along the way. You know, that's what a living sacrifice will do. Whereas if you're static, if you're locked into a certain path that you've chosen, that you believe, you know, this is my one path for my life, and you're not willing to deviate from that path, you know, maybe it will be that you aren't able to prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God in your life. Because you're not living, you know, you're not every moment of every day responding to the call, you know, whether it's the word behind you, as we heard of in Isaiah, or something, you know, a little less specific. But do you follow what I mean by that?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I guess it's this dynamic Christian experience that it's not like, you know, oh, God called me to be a pastor, therefore, you know, that's my one and only calling in life. Yeah. It might be God called me to be a pastor. Go and study theology, go and be a pastor, and then realize God is also calling me to do this, and whatever the this happens to be, or yeah, probably pastor was a bad example, but anyway.
But actually, I actually think it's a good example, because
of course you do, because we think differently about everything.
Yeah. Well, what I mean by that is I think it goes further to highlight that there is no, I mean, just because you're a pastor doesn't mean you were called and all other occupations are not called. Right? You can be going and making your choices in that field as well. I mean, ideally, you're going to receive a call from God because God gives the spiritual gifts, right? And hopefully you have a gifting for pastoral ministry. But it is subject to the same decision-making process that any course of study or any occupation would be. So I think it's a good example.
Hopefully you also have like a special anointing in that role. But yeah. Definitely. Mm. Yep. You still have to go through the same process and you know, seek good counsel and the things we read about in Psalms.
Yeah.
And I wanted to say before, I forgot about it, so it's probably completely irrelevant now, but anyway. I'm going to say it anyway.
Say it anyway.
Because it's cool. You know, in is it Deuteronomy where it talks about God wanting us to be the head, not the tail? Deuteronomy?
Yeah, Deuteronomy 28.
Okay. There you go. That was very specific. I was going to say early parts of Deuteronomy, but I would have been wrong by the sound of it. Yeah, you seem very sure.
But isn't that the beginning of the blessings and cursings, where the first 14 verses are the blessings and the next like 30-something verses are all the curses if you abandon God?
Okay. Do you know any other parts of the Bible or just Deuteronomy? Specific, man.
No, man, just Deuteronomy. It's the only thing I know.
It's my specialty.
Yeah. Seriously, who has Deuteronomy as their specialty?
It's like Someone would.
The books that you could pick as your specialty.
Steve's just checking on you. Anyway, while Steve checks.
Do that.
It is the curses and blessings, but yeah,
I don't know whether that's in there. But anyway.
I thought you hadn't done.
Dude, you're probably right. I don't know why I'm even bothering arguing. So the point I was going to make is that God called Israel to be the head and not the tail. He specifically said that in Deuteronomy somewhere.
Yep.
But that call was made to Israel, right? And so we would probably be like, oh, that's God's people. That's what God calls for God's people, right?
Mm.
But whoa, hold on. What was God's call for Israel, right? In general, his call for Israel, if you go all the way back to Abraham, was that they would be a blessing to all of the nations, right? So Israel was supposed to be a light on a hilltop, shining bright around the place. And the reason why God was calling them to be the head, not the tail, was so that everyone else could come up, join them and also be the head and not the tail. Mm. So the predestination that we talked about being kind of a global experience before, I think is God's plan for everybody. Mm. It just so happens that they had the blueprints, if you like, as to how to get there, because they were given the word. You know, when Paul says, is there any advantage to being a Jew in Romans?
He's absolutely.
Like, absolutely there is, because we have the oracles of God, right? Yeah. Mm. We've been given specific guidance. Steve still hasn't found it. He's still looking. Hunting down.
I'm listening.
I guess you could say that when we use the language predetermination or predetermined, predestined, really what we're saying is it's God's ideal. Yeah. It's God's ideal that everybody would be saved. It's God's ideal that we would live lives of purpose and meaning and pull everyone along with us. It's God's ideal that everybody would make that decision. But we know that our free will, or at least from our theological lens, as an Armenian believing church, it is an idea that it is going to be based on our free will. We can't be forced to be saved or forced to be lost.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And I guess the reason why I wanted to say all of that is because I think if you live up to, you know, good principles, which probably are going to be found in the Bible, but if you're just living good principles because you're living good principles, I think it's entirely possible for you to become the head, not the tail. Also, you know, maybe not to exactly the same extreme, because you're not going to have, you know, the connection with God like a Jesus did. But I think it's certainly possible for you to excel and become very close to the best version of yourself without even knowing God, which is a kind of a big statement, but I believe it.
I've always wrestled with, you know, when you read about the experiences of Daniel and his three friends, you know, where they were like 10 times wiser than the wise men. I'm like, I wish I was 10 times wiser. You see that, you know, that example of being the head, not the tail, really exemplified in those three.
Yeah.
And you just wonder, like, hey, is that still possible in our modern day era? Like, why can't we have that experience?
Yeah. It's a frustrating realization, isn't it? You just feel so, I know I do, you just feel so under, I don't know what the word is, not underutilized, but you just feel like you haven't made it, because you're like, oh, look what these guys could do.
Yeah.
Bummer. Yeah. I went in on the action.
Yeah. I get it. So do you guys have any final thoughts, final ideas as we start wrapping and putting a bow on the episode, so to speak? Anything that hasn't been said that needs to be?
Yes.
Yeah. You're looking for something. So.
Oh, no. No, it's all good.
It was in Deuteronomy
28. at the end, 28?
13, yeah.
Oh, it's 13.
28, 13.
Nice.
Yeah, well done, Luke. You're a scholar and a gentleman.
What I wanted to say, I guess we did talk about going to some specific examples, which I think maybe that's where you want to go.
Yeah.
Just before we do, though, I was thinking about like a really good example of God's will, and the wrestle of this conversation is Jonah. The book of Jonah, I mean, not the life of Jonah. The life of Jonah is all over the shop. But you know, God gave a prophecy that said that Nineveh was going to be destroyed, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and so... If we're going with the whole predetermined, you know, everything God says is predetermined to happen, you know, something went wrong there, because Nineveh was not destroyed, you know, as a result of this prophecy, right? Mm. But I think a closer inspection of the book indicates that God's plan for Nineveh was for them to be saved. That the prophetic message that Jonah conveyed might not have actually been all that accurate. But also, even if it was accurate, that it was maybe meant to be a bit of a wake-up call. Mm-hmm. However...
Because if it was only about punishment, why send a messenger?
Yeah. However, it does indicate something interesting about prophecy, and that is that prophecy can be conditional. Mm. And so I think it's important for us to realize the same thing about, you know, maybe direction we receive in our lives, or I guess finding God's will. You know, we might at a point feel very convinced of something, that this is God's will for my life, right? Mm. Kind of like Jonah going to the Ninevites and saying the city will be destroyed in 30 days. That kind of convinced, right? And then we might receive more light. Or, you know, we might, I don't know, whatever will happen in your life. I can't think of anything else other than receiving more light. But anyway, we'll go with that. Maybe if you have an experience and you receive, you know, more instruction in a certain direction, and you're like, oh, okay, I was wrong. then changing, you know, changing direction and doing something different than what you thought to be the express will of God could actually be God's will for your life in that moment. Mm-hmm. And it could be that you were on the journey with God and you were wrong the first time, mm-hmm. or it could be that you were right the first time, but that was God's will for your life for a time. You know, and I think that's something we've got to consider as well.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's my little tidbit from Jonah. You want to go practical though, so
yeah,
go.
Yeah. I guess just to kind of set the stage for this part of our discussion, like when you think of King David, where God anoints him as king at a very young age, you know, he's probably wondering how this is going to happen because there's currently a king at that point in time. Mm-hmm. Like you're just thinking to yourself, okay, like, what a luxury it would have been that David knew that he was heading somewhere. God promised him something that this is what your life is basically going to look like.
Yeah.
But just the pathway to that was all over the place, wasn't it? Like it was, he had to go through quite a bit of troughs and valleys and peaks.
Wouldn't that be crazy frustrating though? Like, I'm supposed to be king by now. Like, you know, was I supposed to kill Saul or was I, you know, I mean, obviously he didn't go down that path. But what I'm meaning is like, you would be asking questions. Am I doing something wrong? Is he doing something wrong? Like, why is this prophecy not happening?
Yeah, and if David had killed Saul, would he have still become king?
Would he have disqualified himself?
Anyway, sorry.
And for me, like, the reason why I pointed out that story, because I'm kind of at, like, I alluded to earlier in the episode that I'm in a turning point in my life where I have to start thinking about, you know, specialties and things like that. And whereas when I was a kid, it was very clear in my mind that, okay, God, like, even before I was even an Adventist, like, going into the healthcare career was something that I felt really called to. That it was like an epiphany at that time, and I was like, yeah, this is what God wants me to do, and I don't know how I'm going to get there, but it's one day that will happen, you know. And I had that strong mindset, and you always had that goal that you're working towards, and no matter what failures or what successes you had, that strong sense was always pointing to that direction.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's kind of not like that. Now that I've reached to this point, it's kind of like, oh, what now? Like, what does God want me to do specifically? It's not always that obvious. I don't get that obvious like epiphany that I did when I was a child. So I guess
it's almost like God's now saying to you, okay, you know, I like, maybe I gave you this call, I gave you this dream, and now it's your turn.
I've never thought of it that way.
I don't want the responsibility.
Live a little.
Yeah. Well, just bear with me for a second, just as we riff on this idea, because this is something I've been thinking about recently, and that is that as we approach a closer relationship with God, as we get to the place where we know Him better, the knowledge of Him and who He actually is, and this plays into what you were saying at the beginning of the conversation, Dave, but the knowledge of getting to know the character of God calibrates our understanding and our desires and our plan, I guess you could say, for our own life. And so it ideally gets to the place, not where I am getting God's direct, do this, don't do that, but that I will be the kind of person who makes the decisions that God would if He were in my shoes. And so I'm suggesting that perhaps you are at a place now in your life where God is saying, you know, I have molded you, we have journeyed together to this place, and now it's time for you to choose based on your desires. Where are you going? Because I know that, you know, you're in the place where you can make that decision safely. So I don't know your relationship with God, but potentially God is stepping back from that active choice and allowing you to make the choice because He recognizes that you're at a place in your development where that's healthy for you.
Wow. So that's such a fascinating thought, by the way. My mind is blown right now.
I trust you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Maybe God's saying that.
Exactly.
Wow. Okay, guys, this is like, this is real. you can't fake this. I'm like getting advice in real time, guys.
I didn't expect this to go this way, but this is where we are.
No, I mean, to me, it's such a fascinating thought. Like, I've never actually thought of it that way. Because, like for me, it's like.
What would be your response if God did say to you, "I trust you"?
Man, I was like, "Are you sure?"
Yeah, I know, right? Be like, "I think you got the wrong guy."
Yeah.
But isn't that true in other areas of your life as well? Like, I mean, I've been listening to the words of this song this week that talks about how we would look at ourselves a certain way, but God doesn't look at us that way. It says, "If I were you, I would have given up on me by now." And then it goes on to say, but you haven't. You're still here. Mm. And so God views us very differently than we view ourselves. And so just because you might not trust yourself to make that decision doesn't mean God isn't actually sitting back in his throne being like, yeah, it's all good, mate. You got it.
Mm. Wow. Yeah. Well, I'm still blown away.
And can I just throw a bit of practical stuff around this framework? Yeah. You know, and maybe I'll address this to you, but I think this is relevant to any, you know, big decision in your life like you're talking about. Mm. I think it's important to consider, do I have a vision? You know, do I have a vision for my life in the broader sense? And I know you do, right? And so part of your making your decision is going to be along the lines of, you know, what is going to best serve me in fulfilling this vision that I have, that I believe God has given to me, but that I have. And so that specialty might not be your favorite thing in the world about medicine, for example. But it might be something that you are able to use for service later on in your life. Mm-hmm. So for me, like when I made the decision to go and study engineering currently, you know, that to me, that was part of my reasoning. I was thinking to myself, you know, what can I do that suits the way that I think? And that's why I went down this path. And then I was like, okay, if I'm going to go down that path, how can I serve God through this path, right? Mm-hmm. And until I had developed a vision for how I could serve God in this path, I wasn't committed to this pathway. And so for you, I would imagine, Ore, you're a doctor. You've got to decide, how am I going to be a doctor? So the bigger question to me that I would be asking myself if I were in your shoes is, how do I want to serve God through my ministry as a doctor? And then what specialty is going to best serve me in serving God in that way? Mm. Now, of course, you may or may not have that much clarity about your vision. And if you don't yet, that's where you would pray and you would seek God for vision. You know, not for specifics. I mean, that's the way I would approach it. Mm. Some people might approach it with specifics, and that's cool. Mm. But I would approach it, you know, provide me with a vision, provide me with a plan, something that I can, you know, latch hold of and be motivated toward. Because to me, that works better anyway than if God said, I want you to go and specialize in, I don't know, pediatrics. you know, you might be like,
you might as well be a vet. I can't talk to you.
oh no. I'm gonna stop myself. Yeah.
You might be like, well, that's good that I know that, but why? And if you don't have the why, you're not gonna be motivated to do the thing anyway.
I think also too, like if you get told, you know, go work in peds, and you're okay, I'm in peds, what's next? And then you just go like,
yeah,
it's one
decision to the next rather than you having like propelled forward motion because of the vision that you have.
Yeah.
So just hearkening back to this big circles lines thing.
So this is complex theology right here. That's right.
So like for me, like the big circle for King David was becoming king.
Yeah.
But all those lines leading up to it, he could have been king so many different ways. I envisage when I read the account. When it comes to like...
Does that mean this big circle's Goliath?
But yeah, when it comes to
blood on his face.
too much. Oh
boy. Stop it, all right?
He's off duty.
Yeah. When it comes to like our own personal lives, like just going back to, I guess for us, you know, like you're sticking with the topic of careers, for example, like how do we like reconcile like, you know, the little decisions that makes up to that overall decision, like exam preparation and things like that. Like, how do we, like, how should we relate to those little events in life where sometimes we can make a bigger molehill than it needs to be? Like, I feel like, anyway. Mm. Like, you know, you sometimes you think yourself, oh, no, like, is there a certain grade that God wants me to have, for example? Like, God wants us to be the head and not the tail.
Right. So unless you finish top of the class.
You better get high distinctions on every subject, or, like, does that necessarily not have to be part of God's plan? I just wanted to throw that out there. Like, because sometimes that could play a big burden on some people, you know, like they put so much pressure on themselves to expect, you know, certain things, and it doesn't have to be that way. God can still lead you, you know, even if you may even have some failures, you know.
Can I speak to that as somebody who's always seeking for high distinctions? I don't feel that's God's call for me to always finish with a HD. I still push myself toward that myself personally, but not because I feel like some, you know, spiritual calling toward it. I think ultimately, you know, we should seek to do the best we can at what we do. However, something I've been wrestling with this semester, I'll talk to you about this already, is that, you know, sometimes what, like achieving the kinds of marks that I want to achieve throughout the course of my study may require me to make sacrifices I'm not willing to make. So yes. For example, I'm not going to drop, you know, giving Bible studies to the kids that I'm, you know, leading toward baptism, or coming here on a Thursday night to record, you know, this podcast. Things that are enriching experiences for me, or areas of service, you know, like when I was considering whether or not to join the nominating committee for our local church this year. You know, I had to throw in there, well, that's going to be throughout a really busy period of my study time. Mm-hmm. What do I do? Do I say no and not serve, you know, my local church in that way? Or do I put God first in the way that I felt that was the best thing that I could do for the church, was to offer my services in that committee, but recognize that meant, you know, that a couple of hours every couple of weeks out of my already pretty busy schedule was going to be sacrificed, which may mean that I might drop down from HDs to distinctions this semester, you know, which will annoy me no end. But I
it's
guess
a priorities game, right?
Yeah, I guess for me, I felt like that was the only decision that I could make. Not so much to the nominating committee, that was a little bit more blurry, but the black and white ones for me was studying with the kids for baptism. That couldn't be sacrificed, in my opinion. That's too important. Mm-hmm. I care way too much about those things to just let them slide to get better grades, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I guess to answer your question, I think we should aim high, but we should not allow our aiming high to detract from our spiritual journey and our growth and doing the right thing, you know, because sometimes doing the right thing might be, you know, helping a brother in need when you should be studying, or when, you know, for you, bro, you know, you're constantly being called away from work because, you know, family commitments, right? Yeah. And I know that's frustrating for you, but you choose to do the right thing because it's right.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And just want to throw another one in there that you encapsulated that really well, but I want to point out health as another aspect of that, because this is something
I'm dropping out here.
Well, this is something that I'm having to learn. Like, you know, I've got all this stuff that I want to get done, and I want to serve my customers to like absolutely excel. I want to like do the best job I can for them, but I have to acknowledge the fact that I just don't have enough hours in my day to do that. And if I was going to acquire more hours to do it, that would mean I couldn't be doing what we're doing right now. So I have to say, okay, well, where do I start taking stuff from? And for me, normally what that ends up is okay, well, I just won't sleep. I'll do this instead. And then the more I do that, then the less productive I am the following day. And then the more I feel like I need to stay up the following night to try to catch up on what I missed the night before. And it just becomes this cycle. Yeah, this cycle.
And the less likely you are to make right decisions.
That's right.
When parenting, for example.
Mm-hmm, exactly. I become an angry dad. And that is something that I'm prioritizing more and more and more now. Like I just can't afford to be frustrated. I have to, if I'm going to make sure that those kids get to see Jesus in me, then I need to be functional for that to happen. And so I then have to take a step back, because even then, you know, my diet gets worse as I get more tired, because I'm less inclined to put the effort in to cook a meal that's going to be healthy, you know? And so like it just snowballs out of control. And so I think at the, maybe not the apex of the pyramid, but certainly right up there, we need to be thinking about our health so we can execute all those other things. And so if that factors into getting D's rather than HDs, we have to deal with that. It's okay, you know, because God's plan for us is holistic, and it has always been holistic. We should be thinking about what God's plan is for our life, not in individual silos, but as a whole.
Amen.
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah. Sorry, that last little bit was kind of...
I heard a voice from behind me.
Or at least to your left.
Beside me in this case. Yes. Yes, thank you. Also, before we started recording, you were saying, or another area where this could be relevant is in relationships. Mm. And the question that we posed at the beginning, does everything really happen for a reason? I mean, those words, when in the context of relationships, misused.
Yeah.
Right? Oh, it's happened for a reason. Not necessarily. You could have just been an idiot. You know what I mean? Like sometimes we make bad decisions. Don't put that on God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But even those bad decisions that we make, he has the capacity to do something with them. And that is the beauty of the message, right?
Thank you, Mr. Optimistic. Yeah, no, definitely. You're right. Absolutely.
I was going to say, but you know what? I'm right. That's
you were right about Deuteronomy. Why would you not be?
Yes, because that's the index of universal rightness.
if you're right on Deuteronomy, you're right on everything. No, you are right. And I guess I was being intentionally blunt there, because I think sometimes we just have to own our bad decisions and not put it on God and say, you know, like, well, you know, this bad relationship, you know, well, that happened for a reason. Well, not necessarily, you know. And also with regard to relationships, I think it's really important. You know, there's this philosophy out there in the world, you know, this whole, you know, soulmate concept of, you know, there's only ever going to be one person out there for you. So you make your decision wisely.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of pressure to put on yourself. And in
you've
my
got
opinion,
a 1 in 7 billion chance of being right. I mean, what are the odds?
What? Yeah, I was like Harvard at least.
Yeah, yeah. He's keeping his options right open there. But yeah, we get your point. But
so that was so unnecessary, gentlemen.
Sorry.
It is a fair point, though.
It is a fair point, but come on.
Yeah, it's all good. Slate, you're tired.
Yep.
What was I going to say? That was completely derailed me.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Oh, it's a big decision. It's a lot of pressure to put on yourself when really it could be the case. Could be that, like I was saying to you earlier, Ori, about, you know, making decisions. Maybe God is sitting back saying, I've given you some principles to work with. I trust you with making the right decision or making, excuse me, let me get my language more correct there, making a right decision, not the right decision. You know, I think sometimes we've got to get it out of our head that there's only one right decision when it comes to that, and just realize that if all of the principles have been negotiated, navigated successfully, then it's entirely possible that, you know, there could be several people who could fit that criteria and you could have a happy, healthy, successful life with.
Yeah.
So there's no need to put that extra pressure on yourself of saying, you know, there's only one person out there for me, so I better wait for that voice. Yeah. I don't know. What do you think, Laurie?
The thing that I'm gleaning from this is that God wants us to be... He wants us to have full, fulfilling lives. And part of achieving that is having a sense of autonomy and having a sense of responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, time and time again, as I read through scripture, I see that pattern over and over and over again, whether it's asking Adam to tend the garden. God could have made, like, the perfect garden where Adam, like, no, I don't have to do anything. I'm just going to, like, just sit back and enjoy the show, guys.
Yep.
But God, like, gave him an opportunity to improve on something, to expand it, to develop it. And to me, it's like, that's, to me, the general principle that I'm getting is that, like, God wants us to have that in, like, all aspects of our lives.
Yep.
And to me, that's what makes life so fulfilling and so much more awesome, because we have that opportunity to enjoy the fruits of our labor and to enjoy the faculties that God has given to us.
Yeah.
And to me, that's just...
The pen's up. The pen's up.
I just had this illustration come to mind and I'm like, this is good.
What is it this time?
It's not in there. But, like, we think about it, right? If there was a husband and wife and the husband was so controlling that he made every decision for the wife, he told her when she was going to go to work or when she was going to shop or when she was going to look after the kids, he made every decision. She never made any choices for herself. Even if the decisions that he made were good decisions, would we call him a good husband?
No,
we'd call him a control freak.
Nor would we call it love.
Nor would we call it love, exactly. Mm. And so if we are supposed to be relating to God in such an intimate way, why would we expect him to want to micromanage our lives?
Right.
Yeah, that's really good too, because the whole, like, Matthew, like, Revelation talk is all about the church and us as God's people being his bride. Mm. So God's not dictating what we have for breakfast, to run with the analogy, but he does want us to come to him for the big stuff, like when we want to buy a new car or like running with the analogy, like the big decisions that we need to make together.
Yeah.
God wants us to, like, do that together. But
But it's about walking together, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's doing life together like you would with somebody that you love, but not...
Living
sacrifice. You're not being remote controlled. Sorry.
A living sacrifice.
Yeah, living
sacrifice. Yeah. And I just want to harken back to something you said earlier, Ori, and that was...
You used the word harken a lot.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
Harken.
It's contagious.
I must have been reading Deuteronomy or something. you said earlier we should also expect good thing, big things from God as well. So I said a couple of times God might sit back and say, I trust you to make the right decision. And maybe that language is right in some ways, in the kind of in the same way that a parent might, you know, sit back and let their children explore, you know, independence. But they're always there, you know, ready to support them when something, you know, maybe goes wrong or when they've got questions or whatever. But it's also the case that he is right there. You know, he's not sitting back in the sense that he's like, you know, stuff you, you can do whatever you want.
Mm.
It's more of a case of, I want you to explore the possibilities, as you were saying, take responsibility and ownership for your life. But I'm right here, you know, and I've got great plans for you, you know. Like Jeremiah 29 stuff, you know. I've got, what does it say?
Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you a future and a hope.
Exactly. Thank you. He's not just an expert in Deuteronomy, this guy. Do you know what it says after that?
I just quoted one of the most known texts in the Bible. Yeah, yeah. Like, if you had recited John 3:16. You know, funny,
my bookmark is right there as well because I was going to come back to it. So I could have just turned.
Yep.
That says also the next verse, then you will call upon me and go and pray to me and I'll listen to you and you will seek me and find me when you search for me with all your heart. So there's also, you know, God says he has a plan for us, but he asks us to call and to find.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think I just want to throw that back into the conversation. You know, we've been saying God is giving us responsibility, but part of us giving us responsibility is so that we would turn back to him, you know, use our responsibility to seek his face and to seek his advice so that we can grow and excel in the way that you were talking about earlier.
All right. So what we're saying is it's a beautiful, complex relationship, just like all good relationships.
Yeah, something like that. Huh, you're the one summarizing tonight.
Well, so anywhere else we need to go?
Oh, tons, but I think we're good.
We've been at this an hour and a half, you know.
Oh, really?
So I think that's a good place for us to wrap it up. Thank you guys so much for joining us for this episode. I've just had a blast. This has been so much fun. This has been great. So.
I was blessed, guys. I got a lot of help today.
Weight off the shoulders.
If you guys have any questions that you would like to hear us,
rant about.
I'm not quite sure what the right words here are going to be, but if you have anything you want us to discuss at the table,
unstructured conversation on.
Please let us know. You can find us on social media, on Instagram, Facebook, anywhere you like, and we would love to hear from you guys and get some ideas. So we'll leave it right there. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend, and if you're watching this on YouTube, please do what they all say, you know, like, comment, and subscribe.
Do what they all say.
Well, it's true. It helps the algorithm.
Yeah. Go algorithms.
That's it. All right, we'll see you guys later. And that's the end of another episode. Just before I head off, I want to encourage you to go over to our page on Facebook and also our account on Instagram and follow us there, because that is where we interact with our listeners and we would love for you to enter in and join the conversation. Also, while you're signing up, I would also recommend signing up to our mailing list on our website, oztabletalk.com.au. If you do that, you will receive our exclusive content, because occasionally we do release exclusives and they only go out to our mailing list. So I would strongly recommend you go and sign up for that. If you have a few more minutes to be one of the most amazing listeners on the planet, you can go over to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review, because reviews help us to grow and they help other people to find us. So if you want to help us reach those goals, please jump in and give us a review. The final message that I'd like to leave you with is to let you know about our Patreon account. Now, Patreon is a way for creators to get paid for creating, and ultimately what we do does cost money to get us hosted and have the services that we need to run the podcast. And so if you'd like to help us do that, jump over onto patreon.com/oztabletalk, and you can give anything from even a dollar a month upwards, but at different levels there are different benefits, different rewards that we want to give you, just to say thank you for being an amazing supporter of ours. If you can't afford that, we would just gratefully accept your prayers, because that is what our ministry runs on. And so with that, I will leave you to your day, and thank you so much for listening to this episode. We look forward to seeing you guys next week.